It is time to relate what a change took place in English public opinion when it transpired that the real bank robber, a certain James Strand, had been arrested on the 17th day of December at Edinburgh. 3 days before, Phileas Fogg had been a criminal who was being desperately followed up by the police. Now he was an honourable gentleman, mathematically pursuing his eccentric journey round the world. The papers resumed their discussion about the wager. All those who had laid bets, for or against him, revived their interest, as if by magic. The Phileas Fogg bonds again became negotiable, and many new wagers were made. Phileas Fogg's name was once more at a premium on change. His five friends of the Reform Club passed these 3 days in a state of feverish suspense. Would Phileas Fogg, whom they had forgotten, reappear before their eyes? Where was he at this moment? The 17th of December, the day of James Strand's arrest, was the 76th since Phileas Fogg's departure, and no news of him had been received. Was he dead? Had he abandoned the effort, or was he continuing his journey along the route agreed upon? And would he appear on Saturday, the 21st of December, at 9:15 in the evening, on the threshold of the Reform Club saloon? The anxiety in which, for 3 days, London society existed cannot be described. Telegrams were sent to America and Asia for news of Phileas Fogg. Messengers were dispatched to the house in Savile Row morning and evening. No news. The police were ignorant what had become of the detective, Fix, who had so unfortunately followed up a false scent. Bets increased, nevertheless, in number and value. Phileas Fogg, like a racehorse, was drawing near his last turning point. The bonds were quoted, no longer at 100 below par, but at 20, at 10, and at 5, and paralytic old Lord Albemarle bet even in his favour. A great crowd was collected in Pall Mall and the neighbouring streets on Saturday evening. It seemed like a multitude of brokers permanently established around the Reform Club. Circulation was impeded, and everywhere disputes, discussions, and financial transactions were going on. The police had great difficulty in keeping back the crowd. And as the hour when Phileas Fogg was due approached, the excitement rose to its highest pitch. The five antagonists of Phileas Fogg had met in the great saloon of the club. John Sullivan and Samuel Fallentine, the bankers, Andrew Stewart, the engineer, Gauthier Ralph, the director of the Bank of England, and Thomas Flanagan, the brewer, one and all waited anxiously. When the clock indicated 8:20, Andrew Stewart got up, saying,
"Gentlemen, in 20 minutes the time agreed upon between Mr. Fogg and ourselves will have expired."
"What time did the last train arrive from Liverpool?"
asked Thomas Flanagan.
"At 7:23,
replied Gauthier Ralph.
"And the next does not arrive till 12:10.
"Well, gentlemen,"
resumed Andrew Stewart,
"if Phileas Fogg had come in the 7:23 train, he would have got here by this time. We can therefore regard the bet as won."
"Wait, don't let us be too hasty,"
replied Samuel Fallentin.
"You know that Mr. Fogg is very eccentric. His punctuality is well known. He never arrives too soon or too late, and I should not be surprised if he appeared before us at the last minute."
"Why,"
said Andrew Stewart nervously,
"if I should see him, I should no believe it was he."
"The fact is,"
resumed Thomas Flanagan,
"Mr. Fogg's project was absurdly foolish. Whatever his punctuality, he could not prevent the delays which were certain to occur, and a delay of only 2 or 3 days would be fatal to his tour."
"Observe, too,"
added John Sullivan,
"that we have received no intelligence from him, though there are telegraphic lines all along his route."
"He has lost, gentlemen,"
said Andrew Stewart.
"He has 100 times lost. You know, besides, that the China, the only steamer he could have taken from New York to get here in time, arrived yesterday. I have seen a list of the passengers, and the name of Phileas Fogg is not among them. Even if we admit that fortune has favored him, he can scarcely have reached America. I think he will be at least 20 days behind hand, and that Lord Albemarle will lose a cool 5,000. It is clear,"
replied Andrew Stewart.
"And we have nothing to do but to present Mr. Fogg's check at Baring's tomorrow."
At this moment, the hands of the club clock pointed to 8:20.
5 minutes more,"
said Andrew Stewart. The five gentlemen looked at each other. Their anxiety was becoming intense, but not wishing to betray it, they readily assented to Mr. Fallentine's proposal of a rubber.
"I wouldn't give up my 4,000 of the bet,"
said Andrew Stewart as he took his seat.
"For 3,999.
The clock indicated 8:18. The players took up their cards but could not keep their eyes off the clock. Certainly, however secure they felt, minutes had never seemed so long to them.
17 minutes to 9,
said Thomas Flanagan as he cut the cards which Ralph handed to him. Then there was a moment of silence. The great saloon was perfectly quiet, but the murmurs of the crowd outside were heard, with now and then a shrill cry. The pendulum beat the seconds, which each player eagerly counted as he listened, with mathematical regularity.
16 minutes to 9,
said John Sullivan, in a voice which betrayed his emotion. 1 minute more and the wager would be won. Andrew Stewart and his partner suspended their game. They left their cards and counted the seconds. At the 40th second, nothing. At the 50th, still nothing. At the 55th, a loud cry was heard in the street, followed by applause, hurrahs, and some fierce growls. The players rose from their seats. At the 57th second, the door of the saloon opened, and the pendulum had not beat the 60th second when Phileas Fogg appeared, followed by an excited crowd who had forced their way through the club doors, and in his calm voice said,
"Here I am, gentlemen."
Poof, that concludes chapter 34, the Project Gutenberg ebook of Around the World in 80 Days by Jules Verne. This ebook is for the use of anyone anywhere in the United States and most other parts of the world at no cost and with almost no restrictions whatsoever. You may copy it, give it away, or reuse it under the terms of the Project Gutenberg license included with this ebook or online at www.gutenberg.org. If you are not located in the United States, you'll have to check the laws of the country where you are located before using this ebook. Title: Around the World in 80 Days. Author: Jules Verne. Release date: January 1st, 1994. Ebook number 103. Most recently updated, August 6th, 2021, Language English. I kindly remind you there is only one chapter left. That said, we are now paused for Season 2. Here's your preview. Disclaimer. The views and thoughts of In the Beginning are crafted from the KJV, King James Version, protected and licensed from God and the Project Gutenberg. Your discretion has been advised. This is Mojodrama. And the Lord God said,
"It is not good that the man should be alone. I will make him an helpmeet for him."
And out of the ground the Lord God formed every beast of the field, and every fowl of the air, and brought them unto Adam to see what he would call them. And whatsoever Adam called every living creature, that was the name thereof. And Adam gave names to all cattle, and to the fowl of the air, and to every beast of the field. But for Adam there was not found an helpmeet for him. And the Lord God caused a deep sleep to fall upon Adam, and he slept, and he took one of his ribs, and closed up the flesh instead thereof. And the rib, which the Lord God had taken from man, made he a woman, and brought her unto the man. And Adam said,
"This is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman, because she was taken out of man. Therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother, and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh."
And they were both naked, the man and his wife, and were not ashamed. Now the serpent was more subtle than any beast of the field which the Lord God had made. And he said unto the woman,
"Yea, hath God said, Ye shall not eat of every tree of the garden?"
And the woman said unto the serpent,
"We may eat of the fruit of the trees of the garden, but of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God hath said, Ye shall not eat of it, neither shall ye touch it, lest ye die."
Serpent said unto the woman,
"Ye shall not surely die. For God doth know that in the day ye eat thereof, then your eyes shall be opened, and ye shall be as gods, knowing good and evil."
And when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, and that it was pleasant to the eyes, and a tree to be desired to make one wise, she took of the fruit thereof, and did eat, and gave also unto her husband with her, and he did eat. And the eyes of them both were opened, and they knew that they were naked. And they sewed fig leaves together, and made themselves aprons. And they heard the voice of the Lord God walking in the garden in the cool of the day. And Adam and his wife hid themselves from the presence of the Lord God amongst the trees of the garden. And the Lord God called unto Adam, and said unto him,
"Where art thou?"
And he said,
"I heard thy voice in the garden, and I was afraid, because I was naked, and I hid myself."
"Who told thee that thou wast naked? Hast thou eaten of the tree whereof I commanded thee that thou shouldest not eat?"
And the man said,
The woman whom thou gavest to be with me, she gave me of the tree, and I did eat.
And the Lord God said unto the woman,
What is this that thou hast done?
And the woman said,
The serpent beguiled me, and I did eat.
Because thou hast done this, thou art cursed above all cattle, and above every beast of the field. Upon thy belly shalt thou go, and dust shalt thou eat all the days of thy life. And I will put enmity between thee and the woman, and between thy seed and her seed. It shall bruise thy head, and thou shalt bruise his heel.
Unto the woman he said,
I will greatly multiply thy sorrow and thy conception. In sorrow thou shalt bring forth children, and thy desire shall be to thy husband, and he shall rule over thee.
And unto Adam he said,
Because thou hast hearkened unto the voice of thy wife, and hast eaten of the tree, of which I commanded thee, saying, Thou shalt not eat of it. Cursed is the ground for thy sake. In sorrow shalt thou eat of it all the days of thy life. Thorns also and thistles shall it bring forth to thee. And thou shalt eat the herb of the field. In the sweat of thy face shalt thou eat bread till thou return unto the ground. For out of it wast thou taken, for dust thou art, and unto dust shalt thou return.
And Adam called his wife's name Eve, because she was the mother of all living. Unto Adam also and to his wife did the Lord God make coats of skins and clothe them. And the Lord God said,
Behold, the man is become as one of us, to know good and evil. And now, lest he put forth his hand, and take also of the tree of life, and eat and live forever.
Therefore the Lord God sent him forth from the Garden of Eden, to till the ground from whence he was taken. So he drove out the man, and he placed at the east of the Garden of Eden cherubims, and a flaming sword which turned every way to keep the way of the tree of life. And Adam knew Eve his wife, and she conceived and bare Cain, and said,
I have gotten a man from the Lord.
And she again bare his brother Abel. And Abel was a keeper of sheep, but Cain was a tiller of the ground. And in process of time it came to pass, you just experienced in the beginning. If you want the full experience, then you should subscribe. Modudrama has been made for Spotify, created for all, with captions and video by Orgex Labs, and edited in Clipchamp for Windows with music selected from Upbeat.io. As such, each chapter is licensed and guarded with protection by the Project Gutenberg, and Upbeat, therefore always included in the description to be heard audible and seen visibly on this podcast. Although we encourage Spotify use, by all means shall you choose you may listen worldwide additionally, on iHeart, Pandora, GoodPods, Amazon Music, and yes, ironically, even Apple Music. Until next chapter, stream on.